at all.
I know.
Hi, we're the librarians. Librarians.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Library Sessions. I'm Jen here to talk about an interesting keynote that Martinique and I heard recently. And I'm also here with, as I said, Martinique. Hi.
Hi, everyone. I'm Martinique, and I'm back too.
Today, we wanted to talk about an interesting keynote that we both saw at the Information Literacy Summit, which I think Martinique would probably agree with me. It's one of the better conferences out there, and it is local for us. So we went a few weeks ago, as of the time of this recording, it was a few weeks ago. And the conference is sessions about information literacy, and it's put on jointly by Moraine Valley Community College and DePaul University. So it's in the Chicago suburbs. And, I really found everything at the conference valuable. But in particular, we wanted to talk about the keynote address because it was really interesting, but it also is available online. So the rest of you can also enjoy the excellent talk.
Yeah, so I'm excited to be a part of this conversation because and I'm sorry, you didn't say her name yet, did you?
No, I didn't. Let me say it. So okay. Her name is Wendy Halliday, and the talk she gave was Boundaries and Sovereignties, Placing Students at the Center of Information Literacy. And again, that was the keynote. And we're going to link in the show notes to the video that they very kindly put up a video, which I think is excellent. I wish more conferences would do that. They put up a video so everybody else out there can enjoy the talk as well.
Yeah, so I was listening to her keynote, and it was one of those moments where I feel really glad to be part of this profession because she was talking about all of these big ideas relating to, and obviously relating them to information literacy, but bringing up ideas about power, sovereignty, which was something she talked about a lot, student autonomy, and just a lot of things that I spend a lot of time thinking about on my own, both related to work and outside of work. And she was making connections that I hadn't made before, in particular with her discussion of sovereignty in this map image that she had up that you'll see if you watch the video. And right before we started recording, Jennifer was talking a little bit about the map. Do you want to, you might be able to explain it a little bit better than I can.
Yeah, so she had an image up for the first part of her talk it was an image that she had taken at an art museum, and I think it was Toronto, it was Canada somewhere.
It was, yeah.
And so it was an artist created this map based on colonial maps of Canada, and so she had kind of revisioned the map from her perspective, and revision, for instance, the rivers as made of blood and the Great Lakes as spirit animals, and it was, so it was taking the sort of same context but reframing it and using and visually reframing it. And like I said in our earlier conversation, at first I was feeling like I was having trouble making the connection, but as her talk went on, it became clear that the reason that this map was relevant is because one of the things she talked about in her talk was about letting students define what they need from information literacy, letting them define their goals and explain what they would use it for, and really sort of integrate what they're learning about information literacy into their own frame of reference, the same way that this artist integrated, this sort of physical geography of Canada with her own historical and contemporary perspective.
Yeah, and she talked about one thing I see in my notes here. She says, the language we use, the way we frame things, shapes our actions. And she also talks about critiquing the social and political realities of our campuses and working to make changes. And mostly those ideas raise questions for me. I don't feel like, oh, yes, all of that makes sense, but I like sort of the doors that they open. And I'm also curious, curious about how those become sort of concrete actions or practices or something. And I know she talked about keywords as an example of like when we talk about the language we use, the way we frame things shapes our actions. And at one point she was talking about keywords can bring up a discussion that language is policed in our world. And I just find that so exciting because there's so much of the teaching that we do just sort of like brings us back to a lot of like rote stuff. And I think, I know for both of us and a lot of our colleagues that we try to look at those larger connections, the larger sort of political, intellectual, whatever it is, connections. And I think about something like keywords and having that discussion with students, which is, I think, such a cool thing that we get to do. And the only way I could find myself connecting to it is I know I've talked with students about why use subject terms, but also how using subject terms can be tricky. And I remember, you know, and talking about how our language changes, but subject terms might not be up to date. Like I think in I don't even remember where it was, but the subject terms, the subject, there's a subject term that is transgendered as opposed to transgender, which is not the way people are using that language anymore. And yet that's still in there. It's still part of, it's still sort of shaping our reality,
right,
in a sense, or it's at least worth acknowledging, like, why is it like that? And language is historically constructed and time limited. And I don't know how you both open that up and contain it so that you also have time to talk about actually finding subject terms in databases and things like that. But I love thinking about it.
Yeah, well, and actually, I think that was maybe my favorite part of her talk, was that she challenged everybody to kind of push forward and help students see that they can question things like the language, the keywords, and but she was also eminently practical, that
yeah.
We also exist in a world where papers need to be written.
Mm-hmm.
And that research needs to be done for that paper. And so, you know, there's two kind of competing priorities there. And one of the things, you know, she talked about is just using you can use a very sort of small conversation about a word like transgendered. And you don't have to even make it, you know, big focus of your instruction. It can just be a simple kind of few sentences about, you notice that that's an outdated term. We don't use that term anymore. The problem is that, you know, our taxonomies don't keep up with, you know, social trends very well. And therefore, you know, you can kind of work in a little introduction to this idea. And you're not going to get into much depth necessarily in your just sort of average instruction session, but they're planting those seeds and pointing out the inequity or the problematic terms or the larger context, I think when you see it is a good way to show that this issues are more complex and nuanced than you might think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I'm thinking of so much stuff as you're talking. Like whenever we have conversations like this, there's always this part of me that thinks, I want us to be able to teach semester-long classes so we can really dig into these at that idea level and have students explore all that stuff. But the reality is that's not an option in so many places. And then you contend with, and I totally agree with you that we can incorporate those little sort of mini moments of, I don't know, whatever we want to call them, learning, inspiration, something.
Yeah.
But then Wendy also said something near the end about working with classroom faculty and sort of like, you know, getting students where we can. And I don't remember exactly what she said, but I wrote down, I want to not have faculty think of a library session as giving up class time. And it's something I think we've all heard so much, like, so many faculty value the resources we get, we can provide, and the teaching we can do and all of that, but there is this sense, and as someone who's taught, I sometimes feel the same struggle, which is like, where am I gonna put that in? Because I have other stuff, you know, I have other priorities too. I feel like that sort of opens up another conversation, but maybe a related one.
Well, I mean, in a way, that kind of gets to your comment about teaching a semester-long course. In an ideal world, we would view these skills as something that is worthy of being taught on its own, as well as being integrated other places in a curriculum. But, you know, of course, that's not how it's often viewed at most schools. Which always sort of puzzles me, because I think it's fairly accepted, maybe not universally, but fairly accepted, I think, that writing gets taught all over the place, right? but yet, for some reason, you know, information literacy skills are often not viewed in that same way.
Yeah, well, and I apologize, I'm at my new job today. I've been here about 3 weeks, and I'm working on the computer. I apologize that everyone's hearing some of those alerts in the background. I worked at silencing them, and clearly haven't totally figured that out. But that's just for flavor. So anyway, the one thing that's interesting is because I also studied the teaching of writing. I have a master's in English, and my focus was teaching writing or composition. And although composition has been very well accepted as, you know, like it should be part of the gen ed curriculum, the whole thing at most colleges and universities, writing teachers still constantly hear, how come I have these 300 level sociology students who can't write? Because there is still this, and writing teachers will tell you, we all teach writing.
Yeah.
But teachers outside of faculty, outside of that discipline, tend to think, no, you teach writing in, you know, English 101 and 102 or whatever it is. And by the time they get to me, they should have it figured out.
Right.
And so I've often seen so many parallels there, and I can see being in a situation where information literacy is so much like writing in a school where we do have those courses and they, you know, decide to put us in a certain department, whatever, or our own department. And because writing wasn't always naturally in English departments either, which I thought was so interesting when I was working on my English degree, because we tend to think it goes together, but writing really goes with English as much as it goes with any other discipline that communicates via writing. I mean, sociology, history, anything, but it sort of ended up under that purview. Anyway, we digress.
And I think another thing that I really liked about her conversation too is, like I said, that she was trying to challenge people to think about, to imagine what it would be like if we didn't give students like this very linear idea of information literacy, that you start here, that there's a right answer to a right way of doing it, and that you, if you do those right things in the right sequence, you will end up at the right place and you will be information literate.
Yes.
As if that's, you know, some exactly well-defined, right? And, you know, her point is that it's not linear, it's more like a landscape, like the map that she showed. It's and where students want to go is up to them, and that we can't presume to know where they should go, that we don't understand their history, we don't understand their way of thinking, we don't understand their goals, future goals, you know, and we can make some guesses to help offer information that might be relevant, but we can't really define that for them, and that we shouldn't expect to, and we shouldn't expect them to as well, in terms of like at the beginning. It's not necessarily like, well, my end goal is over there and I'm just going to go in a straight line to get there.
Right. So what do you have a sense for an example of that? Even I'm trying to think of one for myself, or imagine one from a student where I think the way you said it is, we have to sort of meet them where they are and not presume this linear path. And I am totally on board with that. And yet I'm trying to figure out what that means. Like I get it in the sense of of what we as a profession tried to do, moving from the standards and competencies to the framework. I think that's a step in that direction.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out what it means, because I feel like we spend time sort of analyzing, like, okay, first year students need kind of basic skills. They're not ready for conceiving maybe of a discipline yet. Or they need to understand keywords, but they're not, you know, so we have this set, we have this linear inclination. And can you think of something that sort of would put that into context, would make it make more sense, or an example?
I mean, I don't know how Wendy Holiday would, you know, right, describe yeah. it, or what she was kind of conceiving. I mean, when I was hearing her, one of thing that I was thinking of is our as in library profession, like librarians in general, our constant refrain of use library databases.
Uh-huh.
Because from the perspective of the students, is that what are we trying to accomplish by teaching them library databases? And I think that there are two, you know, competing priorities. There's the need to complete an assignment, right this moment to do an assignment for which their instructor has specified they use scholarly articles for, you know, as an example. Mm-hmm. But then there's the longer term picture, the bigger, like stepping back and looking at the big map. And what is the point of that skill? You know, what is the point of using JSTOR to find scholarly articles in the map of their lives? And it's letting them have some agency in determining it, or as I guess as Wendy Holiday would call it, sovereignty,
mm-hmm.
In determining that, is because unless they see themselves taking, you know, like wanting to go to grad school or something where they're going to be expected to do more of that research, there's not always much sense in setting them on some linear path to being an expert database searcher when they're never going to need that skill again. And why shouldn't we focus just as much on searching Google as we do on searching databases?
Right. Okay. That really does help me, because I know at another point she was talking about students don't know why general education is meaningful.
Yeah.
And I've been on general education committees and talked about, like, how can we communicate this to students, or should we talk about it differently? And that seems to apply really well to your example, because they don't know why or if searching a scholarly database and having a good conceptual understanding of scholarly material is useful. And I found myself contending with that as a writing teacher when I started teaching at Harper, because it was a community college, after teaching at a four-year university, where at the four-year university I trusted my students had plans for entering into upper-level undergraduate academic courses. And then I was at a community college teaching a very similar course, knowing that some of my students had very different goals for themselves. And I really did struggle with some of the stuff you just said, using scholarly articles. And I also don't want to come across as saying, like, you know, like, oh, certain profession, you're going into this profession, so you don't need this information. And I don't think that's what Wendy or you are saying.
Right.
It's sort of like create the opportunity maybe, and the connections, but let the student sort of, I don't know, lead the way in a sense. I still.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a tension in education, any education, right? Is that you have teachers who, certainly in higher education, at least, you have teachers who are like the experts, right? And then you have students, and students don't know what they don't know, and so the expert defines what they don't know and then tells them how to get to that level of knowledge that they think that the student should be at, and then the student follows that path. And, you know, that's the model of higher education, certainly.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what that was kind of one of her points is that, okay, that's true. That is the model of higher education. The fact that there is a gen ed committee deciding what students need to know, that's, you know, right there, that is a function of that model that mm-hmm. our society has set up. But I think her point was that that's not maybe the only way to do it, and that there are ways that we can still work within that model, because that's where the library exists, but serve as points of resistance and pushing back in strategic places to sort of maybe move students away from this idea that, or to move, to, yeah, move students and to move colleges away from this idea that there is one path and you end up in a certain place and that you don't have any control over what direction that path goes.
Right. Yeah, I like that. I have two thoughts. I'm trying to decide which one I should go with. And, you know, whenever I find myself sort of bewildered by information, I try to really like hold on to that and explore it, because I feel like it puts me in a position where my students often are that is becomes more and more difficult to imagine as I exist longer in this field. And I recently went to a retirement plan info session, and the beginning was like way too much financial information for me. And I was sitting there being like, just get to my questions. I just want to talk about like how much I should be contributing and how much my university is matching and the basics. But there was all this information about like these funds are invested in bonds and international capital. It was just way too much for me. And so I think about experiences like that, and I wonder how often my students feel that way. And also, what do you do as a teacher, knowing that some of them probably do and others want all of that?
Right. Well, I mean, in some ways that would be like your experience with, you know, this retirement plan. It would be the difference between you going to this big session for many people that's just a generic session versus like working one-on-one with a financial advisor who's going to help you define your goals and then help you figure out how to get to it. You know, that, and I think that's a really different model, and higher education is not set up for the most part. There's some points where I think we're pushing in another direction, but it's mostly not set up for the personalized, you know, help you define your goals model.
Yeah. And I guess that's sort of where, when we talk about interactions at the reference desk or one-on-one interactions with students, and those have typically been known as reference for years, but I think more and more of those really are teaching. Is what's happening.
I think that's the challenge of how do we work within this system, and what are those points where we can push back, where we can sort of serve as a form of resistance to this idea that everybody has to be on this information literacy path while still, you know, getting funding and like.
Right. And I guess we don't have to have all the answers for that right now, but I think it's a really important question.
Well, right. And I think that's why I liked this keynote so much, because I felt like it was not unrealistic. So often, you know, you hear a speaker and they're just super theoretical. That's a lot of times, like LIS faculty, for instance, they'll be very theoretical and, oh, you can do all these things and push higher education in a new direction. But, you know, you got the sense that Wendy Holiday was really very, she was practical and working within it. She understands that we are all in a system, you know, where we have to keep statistics. We have to have learning outcomes. We have to assess ourselves, you know, in a well-defined way, et cetera. So, I think that it's nice to hear those, because I think it's a little encouraging. It's not, because it feels so overwhelming when it's like, well, don't assess. And then you go back to your institution and you're like, well, okay, I'd like to not assess. And then somebody says, yeah, but you have to.
You're like, no, I'm radical. This is meaningful. We're going to see my conference presentation about it. And yeah, it's not going to work.
Right. And I think that's a great lesson for all of us to remember, is that there are little points. There are points of points where you can push, where you can give students a little bit more freedom, where you can, you know, make little changes. And we all have those points in all of our jobs, you know.
Yeah, she mentioned something today that I actually put into practice in an instruction session I had this morning. or no, she didn't mention it today. She mentioned it in the talk. She talked about giving up control, yet talking about why experience is relevant, which is totally a part of feminist pedagogy, that we believe our experience contributes to our learning. And she said, we each have something to bring. And so I was working with these physician assistant students today, which is totally out of my wheelhouse. And I told them this story about being at my doctor recently and asking her opinion on something having to do with my pregnancy, and saying to the doctor, you know, the problem is I'm a librarian and I can find all kinds of research about this. And she said, but what about interpreting that research? And I was like, yeah, I'm not so good at that because I'm not a doctor. Right. So I shared that with my students as a way of saying, no, I'm not here as an expert in your field. I'm here with a particular set of skills, and I can help you, you know, navigate these systems and understand how they work. And then you have this other thing to bring, which is your expertise in, or your, you know, budding expertise in medicine. And it just, I'm sure inadvertently I've done stuff like that before, but it was really her talk that inspired me to find a way to be like, how do we each have something to bring, instead of, you know, me thinking that I've got stuff for you, you know, like I've got stuff you need to know.
So. Well, and I love that. And it, you know, I mean, cause I'm big on like adult learning theory and stuff like that. And that's, you know, a hallmark of adult learning theory as well, is respecting students' expertise and perspectives as well. And knowing, and you know, it's something that people often say, oh, you know, this is adult students, not traditional age students, but I think that's ridiculous, because even traditional age students come with something. They're not just fully formed the day before they walked into a class. So, right. Like, you know, and they come with something. And that's what, like, I always like to tell students that you are the experts on your paper. I am not the expert on your paper,
yes.
You know, and it's because, and I think that really speaks to this whole idea of giving students some sovereignty in their education and letting them, you know, define what they want to get out of things, or, you know, where they want to go, what their goals might be, what their map looks like.
Well, yeah. And I'm going to go back to writing now too. In teaching writing and in like writing center work, there's been a lot of resistance for many years, I mean, many decades, to like drilling students in grammar or editing papers for commas and semicolons, and instead the work being about helping the student make meaning and helping the student find things in their paper that aren't quite working for them, and that you're really the facilitator in that process. And what you just talked about reminds me a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I like it.
I think libraries should move that direction as well. I think we should move in a direction of, you know, stopping. And I think a lot of librarians don't do this, but I think there are still so many who do that really focus on, this is the way to do mm-hmm. research. This is where you click. This is what you do when you get the results. And there's two reasons I think that that's a bad idea. One, I think that it obviously doesn't take into this all the complex issues we've been talking about here. But I also think, too, that it kind of dumps them in a point where suddenly, like, they're not thinking about context or application of that information until that last moment. And then they're, you know, then dump them off on the side of the road and say, okay, well, good luck with your paper, you know?
Right.
And I think, obviously, we're not helping them write their paper, but I think that we should get them started thinking about context and application earlier in the process. But that requires them to know something about what they want to say, you know, and so they have to start to define what their information landscape might look like.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I love metaphors. And the one I thought of when you were talking about that is if you were to say to someone, today I'm going to show you how to make an apple pie. Here is everything you need. Here is what you do, step by step. Oh, you're doing it wrong. Let's do it like this. Like, cut the apples like that. Get this kind of apples. Put them in. The whole thing. As opposed to starting with, like, oh, you want to make dessert. Or like you had a really good apple pie last summer and there was something unusual about it and you want to find a recipe, or it's like it's so much more open.
Right.
And that skill is so much more transferable, because then next week they, you know, somebody wants to, I don't know, make Chinese noodle soup, and now they have the skills to do it, as opposed to just being like, well, I have to call that person who told me how to make the apple pie so they can tell me how to make the noodle soup.
Oh my gosh, I love this metaphor, because I like, so I love to cook and I love to read cooking magazines and I'm like a junkie about that stuff. So, but I, one thing that I read an article not too long ago that was from Jacques Pepin, the famous French chef, and he talked about how recipes, that people today tend to see recipes as really a very specific thing. You can't deviate. And you know, you'll get like terrible reviews on a recipe online and stuff like that. And his point is that, well, that's because you shouldn't be following the recipe. You should use that as like a guide, but then you need to go off of that. So he used an example of, like poaching some pears. And so he said, you know, if you maybe one day you use one kind of pear and another day you use a different kind of pear, well, that impacts the cooking. And what do you do if the pears are cooking too quickly? Well, you add a little bit of water maybe, or you could add a little bit of wine, or you can, you know, you can take the pan off the heat for a little while. You can put it into, you can cook it in the oven. You can, and so you have to, the only way you can know how to do those things is, well, one, learning techniques and not specific recipes, and yeah. two, experience, and over time, you know, yes. You get a sense for how that works. And I think that was that's an infinitely better way to teach information literacy, you know, if only because stuff changes all the time. So if we spend so much time saying, oh, you click over to the right, make sure you click over to the right in this database, you know, and it's like, well, in another database, it's to the left.
Yeah.
In 6 months, that database gets a new interface, and it's not to the right anymore.
Or, yeah. You know. Right, right. Oh, well, gosh, I love metaphors. I have to be on the reference desk in 15 minutes, so I think we're probably going to have to wrap up.
Yeah, that's how, well, this was a good conversation. I enjoyed talking about, I enjoyed seeing it, and now I enjoy talking about it. This key.
Yeah, soon.
So, great. And we're going to put up the link to the video, so please go watch it. It's a little long, it's a little over an hour, but it is so worth your time, I think. I thought it was a really great conversation that she had. And then we, at the conference, we actually had little small group discussions related to the keynote, which were also great. And actually, I think those are also, I think they videoed those also, so I'll have to link to those as well.
Yeah, and we have a Facebook page now. You can find us at the Library Sessions. And
the blog still. So the librarysessions.wordpress.com. So please come and continue our conversation either on Facebook or the blog.
And ALA is coming up. So we hope to do a podcast from ALA if we can find a quiet corner.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, listeners, if any of you are at ALA, we'd love to have a conversation with you. So hit us up on the blog or Facebook.
Yes.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Library Sessions is produced by Martinique Hallerduff and Jennifer Laubond, and it's released under a Creative Commons license with some rights reserved. The music in this episode is from The Library Ants. You can check them out at the Free Music Archive or see the link on our website at thelibrarysessions.wordpress.com.